We begin with, there's a job opening. Maybe this is to wake the intern up. This could be a job for the intern. The United States of America is looking for an attorney. Is he an attorney? No, he's not an attorney yet. Who will be working as an assistant United States attorney in the Southern District of Indiana, who will be assigned to the investigation and prosecution of violations of federal law, including fair housing and fair lending statutes, voting rights, public accommodation, civil rights of institutionalized persons, law enforcement misconduct and discriminatory policing, hate crimes, human trafficking, disability rights, service members' rights, that's our veterans and those wearing the uniform of this great country, religious discrimination, among others. This job is posted at usajobs.gov. They will be working with the United States Attorney for the Southern District of Indiana, Joe Hogsett. Joe Hogsett joins us live. U.S. Attorney, welcome.
Well, I'm glad to be here, Amos.
Unfortunately, our intern is not yet a bona fide attorney, so he could not apply. Will this new position of an assistant U.S. attorney do?
Well, I wanted to come by today to make sure that those in your listening audience knew about the prioritization of the United States Attorney's Office.
Okay.
They are going to be primarily a criminal prosecutor, first and foremost. They have to be criminal prosecutors. But this is the first time in the office's history, the United States Attorney's Office here in the Southern District of Indiana, where we have specifically designated one of our prosecutors to focus at least a portion, if not a significant portion, of their investigation and prosecutorial activities on what we consider to be criminal civil rights matters.
Mm-hmm.
These are issues that are chronically troublesome to our community here.
Right.
And I thought it was time, in fact, well over time, to devote a lawyer to a substantial portion of his or her workload to prosecuting criminal civil rights violations here in the city of Indianapolis and throughout the Southern District of Indiana. So in that sense, Amos, it's a step forward, and I think it's long overdue.
And now this is something where when I read through the descriptions, these are all rights that the Department of Justice, that United States attorneys, no matter their jurisdiction in these United States or American territories, are sworn to uphold. So in other words, there are laws against discrimination to service members.
That's exactly right.
And there may be the people listening, aren't aware that, members who – does that include veterans or that include active duty or National Guard?
Both.
Both. So there may be people that don't realize that that is against federal law for discrimination against our veterans and against our service personnel. I didn't realize that.
And it includes, as you already have identified, it includes human trafficking, mm-hmm. which can affect right. men and women alike, frankly. Mm-hmm. It includes, obviously, the disability community
mm-hmm.
And some of the challenges faced by those who are disabled. But it is a broad civil rights authority that I simply believe the time has come to have a criminal prosecutor dedicated.
It also talks about the civil rights of institutionalized persons. Does that include not only those incarcerated in correctional institutions, but those that might be in medical institutions or mental health institutions?
As long as there's a federal nexus, and more often than not, there may be.
Hmm. Obviously, this what does this pay? Obviously, you got to be a sworn attorney. You have to have some experience practicing law. Does it pay well?
Well, in the relative scheme of things, Amos, you're not going to get rich. Mm-hmm. Anytime you go into public service, you know that the challenges and the satisfaction that comes with being in public service is part of the psychic pay you receive.
Mm-hmm.
They are fairly compensated, but it can run from a range of maybe $50,000 to $60,000 per year up to $100,000
mm-hmm.
per year.
Mm-hmm. 239-1310. We may take a few calls with the United States Attorney. We have to tell you that he cannot comment on any active case that is before his office or any case that has been through his office that is now before the Court of Appeals or possibly before the United States Supreme Court. And he's not going to acknowledge, even though I would probably try anything. He is not going to acknowledge even if he is investigating anything, because you know they investigate a lot. One of the things that I read is that you not only are dealing with things like law enforcement misconduct with this particular attorney, but you've also got a unit that is dealing with overall governmental misconduct.
Yeah, we established just about a month ago a working group of federal and state law enforcement agencies to work with the United States Attorney's Office to root out public corruption and to ensure public integrity from all public officials. Now, that's not just elected public officials. Mm-hmm. It's appointed public officials. It can be public officials in the broadest sense of the term, like a police officer.
Could that also include schools? Because schools are a public institution.
Certainly, if there's any kind of financial wrongdoing and the like, those kinds of complaints or concerns would be ripe for investigation.
And complaints would start with citizens gathering records. It's not just, I think something is going on. You got to have some kind of evidence or some kind of proof that there's wrongdoing going on. Would that start with bringing that to the attention of the FBI?
In fact, we have a hotline that is available to any citizen to call in. They can call the United States Attorney's Office directly. Oftentimes, these matters, complaints that will become part of our investigation, will be brought to the working group's attention. There will be some screening done, and you're absolutely right, Amos. Most of the complaints about public or political corruption will be found in three sources. Mm-hmm. One, are complaints from the public itself. I mean, you know, our greatest ally are the people who watch and report on potential misconduct.
Right.
Another place where we get complaints is from whistleblowers, people on the inside. And then third and finally, it can come to our attention through confidential informants or other people who make it their business to kind of know what's going on in the criminal community.
Mm-hmm.
So the United States Attorney's Public Integrity Working Group is designed to be the most comprehensive effort in the history of the Southern District of Indiana to ensure the public's confidence and trust in their government by rooting out the few bad apples that we do have.
Do people also have to understand that any case that a United States attorney brings in any of the jurisdictions of the U.S. Attorney's Office in this country, you really got to have a whole lot of evidence and you got to have it and have it cold before you even bring the indictment to trial?
That's absolutely
right. You can't come half-stepping?
That's absolutely right. The standard is you have to be able to prove your case, whatever that criminal allegation may be, beyond a reasonable doubt to a jury of your peers. Now, let me just parse that out a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
There may be well-meaning, veteran, experienced people in my office and in many of the federal law enforcement agencies who have a strong suspicion that criminal activity is taking place. But that's not the standard, Amos. Mm-hmm. The standard is, can we prove that criminal activity beyond a reasonable doubt in a court of law in front of a jury of 12 people who know nothing about the case except what they hear in the court?
And it also has to be that jury has to be able to understand the evidence, be able to evaluate the evidence, and be able to meet that standard.
That's exactly right.
And that's not easy.
No, it's not. And particularly, you know, in political corruption cases, we oftentimes are frustrated at leadership because They make decisions that we may not agree with, or they conduct themselves in ways that may not be in comport with the way we would hope they would conduct themselves. Mm-hmm. Well, a lot of that may be unethical. A lot of it may be bad judgment. But whether or not the activity rises to the level of a criminal wrongdoing is a different question altogether.
239-1310, 239-1310 is after news name is. Again, he is the United States Attorney. He cannot, I'm going to repeat this because I'm not getting in trouble with John Roberts or the Chief Justice of the United States Supreme Court or the Attorney General, Eric Holder. I don't need that. I'm in enough trouble. So I don't need those two. So United States attorneys, he cannot comment on any cases that are actively before the U.S. Attorney's office. He cannot comment on a case that's been in the office that is on appeal somewhere, maybe sitting in front of the U.S. Supreme Court. They haven't decided what they're going to do. And if you say, well, Mr. U.S. Attorney, are you investigating? He's not going to tell you one way or another what he's investigating on. If he won't tell Russ McQuaid, you know, doggone well, he's not going to tell me, but he'll take your question anyway. Let me start with John. Hi, John.
Hello.
How are you?
Joe and Amos.
Hey, John.
Joe, this is the first time I've talked to you. I've got two quick questions for you.
Okay.
Question one, how far does the Southern Indiana District go in Indiana? How far is your jurisdiction? Is it all of it?
It includes the southern two-thirds of the state, and in specific answer, it goes all the way down to the river and includes all of the counties, basically south of Kokomo, Howard County. If you drew a line from Kokomo over to the Illinois border and over to the Ohio border, every Indiana county south all the way down to the Ohio River.
Question two, was Susan Brooks one of your deputies?
No, she wasn't. Susan Brooks was the United States attorney, presidentially appointed by President Bush, and she was my immediate predecessor. She was, as you know, John, you have to be nominated by the president. She was nominated by President Bush and confirmed by the Senate, served primarily during the 2 years of President Bush's term. Of course, the United States attorneys serve at the pleasure of the president, which means if there's ever a change in the White House, there's usually a change in United States attorneys. And, of course, with the 2008 election and the election of President Obama nominated me to be the United States attorney, and I was fortunately confirmed unanimously by the Senate.
All right. I appreciate it, John. Thank you. Let me go to Councilman Joe Simpson. Hi, Councilman.
Good evening, everybody.
Good evening.
How you doing, Joe?
Hey, Joe. How you doing?
I'm good, man. Just a question for you. I've been on the council since January and been requesting a financial statement from the city, and I've learned that since October, prior to the election, they have not issued or tried to issue a financial statement. When you ask them for one, they come up with many, many excuses. I, as a legislative body, they find every reason not to do it, and I'm not for sure what's going on. I've been complaining to everybody that want to listen. You can't get the paper to write about it. You can't get anybody to say anything about it. It's like a hush-hush situation around here. And I'm a little concerned, even though, like you say, I don't have any proof or don't have anything, but as a city-county council person, I just want to know, who can I file a complaint with to make the city give us a financial statement? And this is a shame that we're in May, after coming to the end of May, going into June, and I've been on this council, and they have not issued a financial statement. We don't know where the money is. We don't know what's going on, but just want to get your advice on this.
Well, Joe, let me just respond by saying those are public records and are subject to the Indiana public records and open door laws. I would presume that a complaint could be initiated with the public access counselor over in the State House if there are public records being denied, when they are, in fact, public records and they are accessible through public records requests. So I would encourage you to initiate a complaint. You would think as a counselor yourself, you would be entitled to see those almost pronto. But if something formal would require would be required to be filed, I'd direct that to the public access counselor over in state government.
And I appreciate that. Thank you, Joe.
Uh-huh, Joe.
I appreciate it. 239-1310. 239-1310 is Afternoons with Amos. In instances of public wrongdoing, do sometimes complaints come from other elected officials in that jurisdiction dropping dimes on their colleagues?
It can't happen and has in the past. More often than not, we get cooperation from other public officials when they become implicated in the investigation, to tell you the truth, Amos.
On hate crimes, there's sometimes confusion as to what is the federal law surrounding hate crimes.
Well, in essence, it is a crime, a federal crime, if a couple of things. If there is a discriminatory animus, activity that is directed, whether it be by force or otherwise, against an individual who's a member of a protected category, whether it be race, gender, sexual orientation, or the like. And there has to be some kind of federal nexus. In other words, there has to be interstate commerce involved. Now, let me give you a good example.
Mm-hmm.
Something that your listeners may not appreciate right off the bat, but they'll understand it when I explain it. If I exhibit hatred toward you, Amos,
mm-hmm.
and if I pistol whip you or mm-hmm. brandish a gun,
mm-hmm.
That may very well be sufficient to invoke the federal hate crime statute, because more likely than not, parts of that gun or that gun was manufactured in interstate commerce,
mm-hmm.
Or a fire, gasoline, for example. As you know, and many of your listeners know, we have prosecuted several cases in this community for attempted arson or cross burnings,
mm-hmm.
Not in this community in the cross burning sense, but in the district. And in some cases, we have invoked a federal jurisdiction because of the interstate nature of the flammable liquid.
In a lot of these things that this new United States attorney is going to be investigating, are there time limits? The legal term is statute of limitations involved in these. In other words, if somebody comes and says, you know, I believe that I was discriminated against in housing, and it was back when I bought this house in 1970. Well, it's now 2012. Are there time limits involved in a lot of these allegations?
Yes, there are. And depending on the nature of the cause of action, it could be 2 years. It could be 5 years. It could be 8 years. We typically encourage anyone who has a complaint to come forward as soon as possible.
239-13, tell me, go to Brenda. Hi, Brenda.
Yes, good day, Amos. How are you?
Fine.
And hello, sir. How are you?
How are you, Brenda?
I'm doing well. Mr. Haas said, I brought a complaint to the U.S. Department of Justice back in 2011. On what I feel is disability discrimination pertaining to or regarding to young black boys in special education.
Uh-huh.
And I've not gotten any real help. And since you spoke about disability discrimination,
right.
I or my son has been victimized by this, and there's been some retaliation and harassment as a result from the school districts that perpetuate this crime against my son. I have been asking for help. I filed state and federal complaints against various school districts for violating my son's educational rights under federal law, having to deal with a child with a special needs. And because of the harassment and the environment in the school system, I had to pull him out of school, because it was the officials inside the school system that was retaliating against us. So my question to you is, Amos asked the question about statute of limitation, and you said depending on the nature of what has happened, if a child has a right to go to school and to obtain an education, and that child has federal protection because that child meets the criteria, race, disability, then how then does my son does not get the protection at the state level, and then I'm struggling to get help for him at the federal level?
Well, it sounds like a very unfortunate set of circumstances, Brenda, and to the extent that you have brought that complaint to the attention of my office, let me apologize for not being more responsive. It really underscores the importance of today's announcement, and that is that we are now on the verge of selecting a new lawyer whose responsibility it will be in part to be dedicated to investigate and prosecute the violations of federal law that occur in the area of public accommodations and disability. Frankly, to the extent that you feel like you have met a roadblock at every step of the turn, it, in my mind, underscores the need for this kind of addition to the Office of the United States Attorney to assist people like you in furtherance of your grievance.
Yeah, a basic question. If someone like Brenda sends information to your office, do they get any – granted, you weren't there in 2009, but do they get any kind of acknowledgement? Yes, thank you very much. We received your inquiry, but we don't – we will not comment on any investigation. However, we need to talk to you. We know where to find you. You know, what kind of response does somebody get even if they file or in the information or call the hotline?
Good question. The response that they will normally receive is one that explains their rights and responsibilities – and will probably be a preliminary assessment or a screening as to whether or not the information that they've provided allows us to determine with some degree of certainty whether federal law has been allegedly violated or is in play at mm-hmm. all. Mm-hmm. If, in fact, more information is needed, more often than not, they will be asked to provide that. If it's clear to us that while there's some wrong that has occurred, but it may not rise to the level of a violation of federal law, they will be referred more often than not to a state or local agency who is empowered with that authority.
Brenda, so you're saying the information that you sent the then United States Attorney's Office in 2009, you never got any kind of response one way or the other?
All I got from the U.S. Department of Justice was a letter stating that for statistical reasons, for statistical purposes, that's all they did. And I had to beg to even get a letter to verify that I actually filed a complaint with that office.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm very concerned about this because the struggle that comes is when the state outrightly violates a young child's educational rights, especially children with special needs, it's very difficult for parents to get the help that they need, and time continues to roll on.
Mm-hmm.
And then one last thing I wanted to ask you, sir, when I filed that federal complaint with the Department of Education, the school system falsified a consent form that I signed. This is in Pike Township.
Mm-hmm.
So where I had said no to provisions in that consent form for testing, they went back and changed to yes, circled a yes and put an arrow to my signature and wrote in permission to change by parent. That's illegal. So I go forward to file a complaint. Then they accuse my son of a crime. Now, remember, I have a federal complaint that I've already sent forward a month before what happened to my son.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone I've spoken to says it sounds like retaliation. So my son's educational rights was stolen.
Right.
And he is now being forced to leave school in fifth grade, and nothing happens to the school system who falsified the documentations and continue to harass and retaliate and deny my child?
Brenda,
I don't quite understand that.
Brenda, let me do this. You still have a copy of the response that you got from the Justice Department back in 2009 and 2010?
Yes, sir, I do.
All right, here's what I'm going to do. Chris is going to take your contact information. We will give this to the United States Attorney. Someone in his office will follow up, and at least you're owed
an explanation of, you know, if back in the day they didn't, do any kind of action, you're owed that explanation. Maybe the U.S. attorney wants to amplify.
And in fact, Brenda, if you'll send me, or if you're comfortable providing, not on the air, of course, but your telephone number,
yeah,
I'll call you personally.
Okay.
Because again,
I appreciate that.
Okay. So hold on, Brenda, and Chris will get that information. We'll share that with the U.S. attorney, okay?
Thank you so much, both of you.
All right, thank you. Back to the phones in JR. Hi there.
Hey, good day, my brother. How's everything going?
Fine.
Hey, that's great. You have a good holiday? I had a great holiday there, Amos.
We did. What's up?
Well, I was just listening to the comments, and I can empathize with the young lady Brenda there because I filed a discrimination case against the USDA where I worked for approximately 4 months from May of 2010 to September 2010, and they politely escorted me off the grounds simply because I made a comment. And if you remember, it was during the time previously when that Garcia woman was with the USDA, and mm-hmm. she made a comment, and they blew it all out of proportion, and they fired her, and they offered her a job back, and she didn't want to take it. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Well, my situation is just I was basically told to come to my supervisor's office, and when I got there was a two U.S. marshals waiting for me and escorted me out of the hog processing plant where I was inspecting bacon. I inspected hogs.
So you were a USGA inspector?
I was a USDA food inspector, slaughter division.
And you had been on the job more than 90 days?
Well, yeah, I have.
Hold on. Were you still in probationary?
Well, that's the thing. They considered, even though I had military experience, they considered my appointment a probationary status, and the probation lasts for 18 months.
I see. And when you say you filed a complaint, who'd you file the complaint with?
The same organization, the federal level discrimination. I went to that particular.
Within USDA? Wait a minute.
No, outside the U.S. Well, within the USDA and outside the USDA, but I never could, just like that young lady there, I never could make no progress. And even though I got a union representative to represent me, I found out later that the union representative, primarily represents the people that are already employed. He really didn't represent me very well because it came down to my case was dismissed under the grounds of there was no jurisdiction because I hadn't been employed with the USDA long enough.
And did you file with EEOC?
I tried to file with EEOC, and I was told that I had to get a consent.
I got it.
A consent to sue or something like that. It was a whole lot of legal mumbo jumbo that I didn't understand.
And let me let the U.S. attorney respond what little he can in this.
Well, I think, J.R., to the extent that you were employed from May of 2010 through September 2010, it's very important that we take a look at that in a timely way because there may be jurisdictional, as Amos has mentioned earlier, statutes that affect your ability to maintain your claim. That's another thing that if you would give your contact information offline, I'd be more than happy to call and to talk to you about it so that we could get to the bottom of it. Again, underscoring the need for this new position that I've created in the United States Attorney's Office.
So, JR, if you would hold on and give your name and a phone number where you can be reached during the day to Chris, okay?
Yeah, thank you very much, sir. Appreciate it.
All right, thank you. And I'm going to see how good the U.S. attorney is. You mentioned earlier there's a hotline. What's the hotline number? It's the real test now.
Oh, boy, Amos.
Did we get you? Did we stump you?
It's not an 800 number yet.
It's not an 800 number yet.
But it's area 317-229. You need to call 2403.
229-2403.
Right.
And I'm sure somebody in your office, if we're giving the wrong number, they will email me.
Yeah.
And tell me the correct number. And if there is an attorney out there who thinks that they would be a great assistant United States attorney, you simply go to usajobs.gov. That's the portal where you can apply for any job.
in the federal government. USAjobs.gov, USAjobs.gov, go to Department of Justice, go to your assistant U.S. attorney, then you'll see Indianapolis or Southern District of Indiana and apply. It's simple. Yeah, and you got to put all your resume and all that kind of stuff there. Joe Hawks at the United States Attorney for the Southern District of Indiana. From every place from Kokomo down to the Ohio River, from Richmond all the way over to Terre Haute. Thanks very much for being with us. Always good to see you.
It's my pleasure. I liked coming back.
All right. When we come back, there's crime downtown. Oh, I should mention, you all have those in hand. If you use a gun, there's extra penalties.
Yes.
Whether the gun is legal or not, there's still enhanced penalties.
There could be many enhancements that apply.
So don't commit the crime to begin with, and don't commit it with a gun, because then uncle can get involved.
Right.
And uncle don't play. Because, you know, the president, he didn't play with bin Laden. He ain't playing with them Al-Qaeda, so you know he wants the Justice Department not to play. When we come back, violence at the Speedway. No joke. Violence on the canal downtown. We're not even to June yet. It's open lines the rest of the way out. It's at, and the prosecutor's mad at the public safety director because evidence was not protected. The police went and looked at that bizarre blood evidence and didn't bother to tell the prosecutor, even though it's evidence and it's not their evidence. It's the prosecutor's evidence. You know, if I tried to write that for Law and Order, they throw the script out as unbelievable. Anyway, it's Afternoons with Amos. What's on your mind? 239-1310. 239-1310. More after these.